Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, November 10th, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Having great wealth sometimes makes people lonely. A cultivated woman, a woman of breeding and intelligence, can enrich a man's life immeasurably. I have those things to offer, and time doesn't take them away.
Madam, are you trying to seduce me? Well, I'm busy right this minute because I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Today, we have part two of my chat with the brilliant erotic author, Jeremy Edwards. He joins us again this week to finish the conversation we began last week. As you recall, this is part of my new series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. If you somehow missed part one of this charming and informative discussion, look for last week's podcast number 68 in the podcast archive on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Today, we welcome a brand spanking new podcast sponsor. I am so delighted to introduce you all to Ropex. Hey, all you men out there, are you tired of dribbling when all you really want to do is shoot? Do you think you need a little bit more spunk in your spooge? Well, I have just the thing for you. The good folks at New Generation Labs bring us Ropex, the original Swedish ropes formula. Say what? You heard me. Ropex is the natural way to increase semen volume so that when you bust your nut, you get all those desirable rope effects spewing out your willy. Ropex was developed in Sweden in the mid-1960s. It's a unique blend of pharmaceutical-grade botanicals designed to improve prostate function, which is, of course, the key to heightened sexual pleasure. But you all know that already, huh? But wait, I know what you're thinking. Hey, Dr. Dick, I've tried a bunch of other products that were supposed to put the lead back in my pencil, and I got nothing but disappointment to show for it. You're so right, my friend. There are a lot of bogus products out there, and a bunch of them make outrageous claims about everything to do with our sexual functioning. But Ropex is different. This is not a cure-all, mind you, nor does it claim to be, but it does do what it says it will. Still not convinced? Okay, check out my product review page at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Scroll down till you find review number 21. You will see that I used Ropex myself. And like all of my reviews, I give you my unvarnished opinion. So if you're looking for a little help in the jizz production department, visit the Ropex website today. Look for their swell banner in the sidebar of my site.
Close the curtains before you undress any further.
Not only will I close the curtains, my dear, but I'm going to shut the door. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Jeremy. Thank you again for joining us. I'm still reeling after last week's episode.
Wow.
yes, sirree, Bob. I couldn't get out of my mind that wonderful last story, that parts of that last story that you read to us. And I'd like to pick up where we left off in terms of your nom de plume.
Mm-hmm.
Without revealing too much of your true identity, I'd love to find out how the real you becomes Jeremy.
You know, you did that great interview with KJB.
Uh-huh.
All your interviews are great.
Thank you.
But in that particular one, I remember she was talking about that separation that you're talking about. It was very interesting. In my case, it's not quite like that. Jeremy Edwards isn't really a different facet of me. He's just really me with a different sign hanging out in front.
I see.
So to speak. You know, my fascination with the erotic is certainly expressed more when I'm using that name than when I'm interacting with people in other parts of my life, because, of course, that's the purpose for the name.
Uh-huh.
But it's really the same me, and for better or worse, it's the same personality that comes across, although the jokes are a little dirtier when I'm operating as a lot dirtier, let's say.
So you give yourself permission to expose a part of yourself, your real self, as Jeremy, that perhaps wouldn't have as much permission as your real self, would you say?
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, the context determines what's appropriate, I guess. And, you know, it's funny, when I got my first erotic story or two published, I didn't anticipate how much of my life I'd be living under this name.
Uh-huh.
I sort of figured, you know, my work would run under the pen name, and maybe I'd be lucky enough to get some fan mail, but it would basically just be a byline.
Uh-huh.
I soon found out how much more fun I was in for as Jeremy, you know, interviews and podcast readings and blog discussions and my Facebook and even in-person appearances, and especially just interacting with all the writer friends, the editor friends, the colleagues from this world. You know, I have a whole life, you know, under this name. And as a result, I'm almost more used to being called Jeremy these days than I am being called by my real name.
Ah, interesting. Back to what you mentioned about our first guest, KJB. I think I elicited from her anyhow, because she didn't really come right out and say this, but there was an actual transformation that happens when...
I think there was a phone booth, wasn't there?
She goes to a cafe, and possibly a phone booth on the way. I don't know, that was very clever of you. See how you are? she goes to a cafe and writes every day, and her real person... reality becomes K, and then she has to put K away in order to be, you know, a mommy and, you know, all the other good things that she does as a normal person. Do you find that you have to compartmentalize Jeremy so that he doesn't contaminate the other parts of your life, or is contamination and not a good word?
it's not usually used in the positive sense.
Yes.
I know you meant it in a good way, but it's not so much like that for me. I mean, when I'm interacting with people from the erotica world, I feel very free to talk openly about erotic things, about sexual things. I know I don't have to watch my language.
Uh-huh.
And I love that. It's very freeing. And I feel like, but I can also talk about, you know, if I'm talking to an erotic writer friend, I can also talk about, you know, what I had for dinner. I can talk about anything with those people. And that's a wonderful feeling because, you know, I don't like the fact that in most of our lives, we have to be, you know, overly conscious of, you know, watching our language. And I mean, I don't always have to, depends who I'm talking to, but there are contexts where I have to watch my language. There are contexts where people would be uncomfortable if I talked about something of a sexual nature. And, you know, I can do that. I can be careful about that. But I certainly like it better to feel like it's all kind of available, depending which direction the conversation goes in.
I certainly can identify with that because I find that I can run amok if I'm not careful. Like I said last week, there isn't hardly a hair's width of difference between Richard Wagner and Dr. Dick, and most of the time I find that very liberating and a happy thing, but it can cause great disruption in my day-to-day interaction with people. I mean, even in casual associations, when people find out that I'm a sex therapist, that is off-putting. And, you know, if I encourage them to visit my website, drdicksexadvice.com, that is often way too much for the vast majority of people. And, you know, I've lost friendships over this, or at least possible friendships, and it's very disconcerting. So, it's an interesting thing, our culture and sexuality. That's quite odd.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is kind of a tangent, but one of the things that I like about the erotica world is there's a lot of banter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, you know, tease each other and they make sexual jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about people actually getting into, you know, online relationships and all that's a whole other kind of thing, obviously.
Right.
But I'm just talking about friends who feel comfortable, you know, just kind of flirting with each other and just, you know, making little light, you know, kind of risque jokes and stuff. And that's fun. And I like being in a world where that's accepted by and large, where you're not going to offend somebody by making, you know, a kind of risque joke, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's also, it would seem to me that it's a great way to practice one's art, you know, out loud with other people.
You say something just right, then you write it down, and
that's right.
Shows up in
that's
your
right.
next story.
And that's not the kind of thing that you could do at the grocery, you know, or
not anymore. No,
at the PTA.
After the manager had that talk with me.
Exactly that. Good. When did you first begin to write erotica?
I first wrote some erotica in 1995, and I'd been reading a lot of erotica, and I wanted to try creating some of my own and tailoring it to my own turn-ons.
Uh-huh.
And I also wanted to see if I could maybe market it to a book publisher. And I'd always enjoyed writing, so it was natural that my interest as a reader would find expression as a writer. And I should mention I've done other types of creative writing, so erotica was in addition to that. It wasn't, you know, the first or only writing I'd done,
right.
Although it has become my primary creative endeavor. But back then, I didn't have a very good handle on the market for erotica, which I believe was also a more limited market in those days.
Yes.
And I didn't come up with anything that met the needs of the market, but I'd gotten something out of the experience of writing in the genre, and over the next decade, it was a form I came back to from time to time, just as something to write for my own enjoyment. And then finally, about 3 years ago, I became motivated to try writing erotica for publication again. I was inspired by the growing presence of the high-quality erotic web magazines and the print anthologies.
Yes.
And all of this. It was an exciting literary world to me, and I wanted to be part of it.
Right. May I ask your age?
Mid-40s.
Mid-40s. So in 95, you were how old when you began this?
I guess about 32.
Ah, interesting. Good. So may I pursue then the other interest that I have is how come erotica as opposed to a romance novel or other kind of fiction, or as you suggest there a moment ago that you do other kind of writing, can you talk about the other kind of writing that you do?
Maybe a little.
Okay.
I have done songwriting, and I've done some nonfiction writing and some humorous writing.
Uh-huh.
And I have not done a lot of fiction, you know, narrative fiction that was not erotica. And I haven't done romance fiction at all. I don't tend to think in terms of big, juicy plots.
Before we continue with my probing questions, can we ask you to read again?
I would love to.
Excellent.
I'm going to read parts of a story called Kavanaugh's Ridge, and this appeared recently in an anthology called Tasting Her, edited by Rachel Kramer Bussell. Rachel did two companion anthologies for Claeus Press, about oral sex, erotic fiction on the subject of oral sex. One was called Tasting Her, and the other one was called Tasting
Him.
Him. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so clever.
So this is from Tasting Her, and I will read a couple of sections. So I'm going to start at the beginning, and then I'm going to do a little jump, so bear with me,
cool.
As they say. Estelle was so tense, she was ticklish. I don't mean, do that again, ticklish. I mean so ticklish that if I kissed her between the legs, she'd leap 3 feet in the air, from a horizontal position, mind you. So, it had been weeks since I'd kissed her between the legs. Oh, we had sex. Good sex. I was a creative guy, and there were a lot of things I could find to do that didn't involve kissing Estelle between her luscious thighs. I did them all. And she did things, too. She may have been tense as a guitar string, but she knew how to get us both off. But my face missed her pussy, the intimacy of my lips on her most personal flesh, right there. The delicate flavor, so elegant and yet so animal, the perfect essence of beauty in heat. And I missed getting a full nose of the accompanying aroma, because if I'd stuck my nose in there, she would have jumped 4 feet. Sometimes I would lie there at night, after coming heavily into her, after pumping and grinding her into her own tense little orgasms, and I would imagine her pussy in my face. It became an obsession, a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. Yes, I'd been inside her moments earlier, but now I dreamed of making love to her all over again with my lips, of tasting her on my tongue. I could visualize Estelle's pussy in complete, meticulous detail, just as I could visualize the topo map of our county if I shut my eyes, and had nothing better to visualize. No two landscapes look alike, and I had studied every valley, slope, swirl, and crevice of the private national park between Estelle's legs. As I lay there at night, imagining her map spread out for me, I felt like a horny park ranger giving myself a tour. I even invented names for some of the geographical features of Estelle's vulva. There was one lovely fold at the left that I dubbed Kavanaugh's Ridge. I had no idea where I got that. I'd never known anybody named Kavanaugh, but it just sounded right. It sounded right in my head, to be more precise. I didn't actually tell Estelle that I'd embellished her genitals in my mind with cartographic nomenclature. I was afraid that might make her tense. And jumping ahead here. Maybe I was imagining things, but I could swear that Estelle's right knee tasted different from her left knee. They were both savory, fresh and feminine and familiar, but the right knee seemed a smidgen saltier, where the left was slightly sweeter. But this wasn't about knee-to-knee recipe tests. This was about kissing Estelle at the edge of her safe zone, until she was so used to the feeling, so totally, tediously accustomed to it, that her nervous system's irrational defenses would flag, and her skin would welcome my mouth's assent, like in the old days. That was the theory, anyhow. Finally, I could tell that if I kissed her knee one more time, she would be likely to sit up and start doing a crossword puzzle. "Hey," I said softly. "Hey." I positioned my lips about a centimeter farther up her leg, just enough to cross from knee territory to thigh jurisdiction, in the eyes of an anatomy specialist. Then I gave her the lightest possible kiss, and I braced myself for the dreaded feeling of Estelle tensing up and shivering. She didn't. She didn't do anything, in fact. I wondered if my kiss had been so light that she hadn't even felt it. Maybe it didn't count. "That feels good," she said quietly. Those three words made me want to cry with hope. But I knew I still had a long way to go, and I had to keep both my calm and my momentum. So I tried not to think too much, and I focused on kissing her thigh again, just as lightly, but another centimeter higher. Again, I waited for her reaction. I was prepared now for either a positive one or a negative one. But all I perceived was Estelle's regular breathing. That was good, though. And so I went higher still. Emboldened, I advanced up her thigh without waiting to see how she would react to each and every touch of my lips. I trusted in the inevitability of my progress and the regularity of my rhythm to keep her body from freaking out. I trusted in my knowledge that, despite the obstructive behavior of her nerves in recent weeks, Estelle wanted this as badly as I did. On some level, I still couldn't believe it. I was kissing Estelle's sweet upper thigh, and nothing bad was happening. She was even purring a bit now. But I knew the proof was in the pudding, and I hadn't yet gone near her pudding. And we can stop there.
Oh, that's great. Love it. I absolutely love it. Good for you. Talk about building the tension. Holy cow. Are there topics that you gravitate toward and topics that you avoid?
Yes, I do. I write to the things that I find attractive. I know some erotica writers like the challenge of writing about things that they are not personally aroused by.
Uh-huh.
But I stay closer to home. So I write about the things that turn me on, and then that's not a criticism of the things that don't. It's just sticking to my own personal preferences.
Good, good, good. Do the themes expressed in your work reflect your own lifestyle?
Well, now there's a difference, of course, between turn-ons and lifestyle. So they certainly reflect my turn-ons, but I don't personally have or crave every single sexual adventure that my characters explore.
Mm-hmm.
I would be dead.
And not just 46 or mid-40s.
But, you know, putting myself into those worlds, creatively speaking, does come easily because I'm tapping into my own fantasies and my own overactive erotic imagination.
I guess so.
And even if I sit down to write about a theme that it never would have occurred to me to write about, let's say because an editor has requested stories with a particular focus, which happens frequently, what I'm going to do is take that topic somewhere where my own buttons will get pushed.
Uh-huh.
And if I can't make a topic work for me in that way, then I won't write for a particular project because uh-huh. because I'm looking to write for projects where I'm going to get something personally out of it, erotically speaking.
Yeah, and not just cash money and notoriety.
Right. Right,
that's
right.
Cool. I mean, that interestingly enough, as you know, the part of this series, I'm interviewing all kinds of erotic artists, and some are graphic artists. And so, one of the things that I've been asking them is, is it possible for you to eroticize or paint or illustrate or whatever, sculpt, something beautifully erotic that is not part of your, you know, sexual sensitivity? And interestingly enough, they say that they possibly could do that because they're artists, but it would not be infused with the same passion. And so it wouldn't be as alive as the work that reflects their sexual interests.
And my personal answer is, you know, I probably could, but it doesn't attract me. But yeah. I do know some writers who have just done, you know, beautiful, amazing work on themes that didn't personally interest them. And I would venture to say that you'd never know from reading what they were writing about that wasn't a personal turn on for them. So I really admire that.
That's chameleon like and very interesting. That would be something truly to investigate in this series, The Erotic Mind.
Yeah, I think if you keep asking that question, you're going to get some different very interesting answers. Yeah.
Yes, exactly the point. You write about yourself on your blog. As a writer of erotic fiction, I endeavor to spin libido into literature. My greatest goal in life is to be sexy and witty at the same moment, ideally in lighting that flatters my profile. I love it. Because in all the stuff that you've read so far, there is sometimes more than a hint of humor. And I think laughing and sex go hand in hand, at least in my world.
I have to agree. And I recently had a story in an anthology called Laura the Laugher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have it in front of me to read, but this is just a little plug. The anthology is called Ultimate Burlesque, and it raises money for cancer support.
Wow, good for you.
And the stories are all about burlesque. And my burlesque artist, the woman I created for my story, her entire act is about laughter, and it's completely eroticized laughter.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, as you suggest there, you have quite a libido. Is that correct?
As has been said many times, the most important sex organ is the brain.
Uh-huh.
And my physical sex drive does seem to be hanging in there, so to speak, in my 40s. But mostly I'm talking about the psychological libido.
Uh-huh.
There.
Maybe we need to bottle that and sell it to the libido deprived. We could make a fortune. May I ask, who inspires you and who are your sexual heroes?
Well, I have to say I'm deeply inspired and nurtured and sustained by the amazing community of erotica writers and editors. It's a real privilege to read what these people write, to write for them, to share a professional life with them, and there's so many friendships and just barrelfuls of fun. And it, you know, it's too many names to name, but it's just a group of brilliant, generous, lovely people, and that inspires me.
Uh-huh.
And those are my heroes. And I also need to say, my biggest, most constant, lifelong source of inspiration and support and sustenance and motivation and everything else good is my wife. You know, she bolsters me in every aspect of my life. And as far as my life as an erotica writer, specifically, you know, she does everything from making me feel sexy to enjoying and praising my work to cheering me on and celebrating my success and giving me technical support and advice and making it easy when I need to schedule interviews or if we want to travel someplace for networking or whatever.
Wow.
Well, you get the idea. In short, she's the greatest.
Outstanding. What a great testament to a good relationship. Because this could be a torturous thing if you were destined to be an erotic writer and your partner couldn't buy into it. That would be torture.
Yeah, she's very very into it.
Well, tell her thank you from Dr. Dick.
Oh, I will.
So what does a future hold for Jeremy Edwards, do you suppose?
Well, I'm hoping to keep the stories coming, and I have, as I mentioned, also completed an erotic novel.
Uh-huh.
And I'm currently exploring the possibilities for the publication of that work, so stay tuned on that.
Excellent. Any advice for aspiring erotic writers?
Yeah, and I was very interested in what Kay had to say on your show, and I'm going to echo that a bit. You know, to keep your heart tuned to what you find erotic,
yes,
and to keep your eye on the mechanics. You know, I talked about how some accomplished writers will deliberately choose to write about things that they don't personally find erotic, but that's probably not where you want to start as a new uh-huh. writer. And the mechanics, now remember, this not only means avoiding run-on sentences and misused commas and all that, but, you know, watching those tenses and points of view.
Right.
Point of view is interesting in particular because, you know, it can and sometimes must change in the course of a story, but it has to be done gracefully and deliberately so it doesn't look like the writer forgot halfway through a paragraph who the primary protagonist was. And another thing I've seen that I would say something about, sometimes you see informally structured sentences, strings of phrases connected by ellipses, three little dots, you
uh-huh.
know, giving a sort of stream of consciousness flow. And you know, I believe that's a legitimate technique, and it's used in good fiction writing. But I think that's an approach sometimes people use because it's easy. So I think you should, as a new writer, if you're doing that, ask yourself why you're doing it. And if it's because you think it's giving your prose the specific literary effect that you want, the effect that's best for this piece, then, you know, rock on. But if you're doing it just because it's quick and easy, then maybe, you know, reconsider that.
Hmm. Interesting.
And then, you know, as far as content, I think what it's all about is just making sure that the details that you think are important as a writer are conveyed in a way that's really going to connect with the reader, you know, with our senses and our emotions and our thought processes. Because, you know, some details are just details.
Yeah.
So you might mention hair color or a piece of furniture just to sort of flesh out an image.
Yeah.
But if it's supposed to be erotically powerful, then, you know, you use original language, use compelling language, use evocative language.
Yeah.
Make the reader need you and your words and your voice. You know, give the reader something that the reader would not have thought of without you.
Yeah. And I suspect, and this is actually held true in some of the stuff that I've read, where I'm reading along, and I'm reading like what I would a gay story, for example, and I'm imagining that this is written by a gay man, and it goes along perfectly well, and then there's a fatal flaw where the author clearly uses the wrong word to describe something, and it falls apart. I was reading a story and just recently, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And it was a great, great story. But there was this one little tiny fatal flaw that the author said something about something the protagonist was wearing, and a man would never have used that term. And I just thought, isn't that interesting? So, but it didn't diminish the story. I mean, it just like, it kind of woke me up.
And that's one of the reasons that editors are so important, because no matter how good you are, you know, you make mistakes,
yes.
somebody else will catch it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, good. Before we conclude, can you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
Yes, I have a blog, and so that's HTTP, et cetera, et cetera. Gerotic, so that's the word erotic with a J in front of it, Gerotic, .blogspot.com. I also have a MySpace page, so it's myspace.com/gerotic. But the primary publicity organ, if you will, for me is it's the blogger blog. And I try to keep it current with announcements, and I try to make the announcements entertaining, even though they're basically just announcements
uh-huh.
about where my work is appearing and so forth, that I try to, you know, not make it a burden to read. And we get a lot of comments from other writers and friends of mine, so that's always
Kobe.
Fun. And I've got the clickable book cover, so you can go buy the books and uh-huh. links to the online venues where my work appears, and widgets that have the radio programs that I've been on, and links to interviews and guest blogs and excerpts that feature me, and uh-huh. a half-naked picture of me.
Get out!
That's what they say when they see it, yeah.
And so I think you just mentioned where we can buy the compilations of your work. We can buy them through your Blogspot website. Yes?
Yeah, I don't sell them, but you can click through there
right.
to the publisher sites, which usually do direct sales, and or to Amazon.
Right.
If you're abroad, you know, the various Amazon sites
I am not abroad.
Carry a lot of these books. And Barnes & Noble and Borders Online also do that. And in the brick-and-mortar world, a lot of the better independent bookstores, as well as the large bookstores, will carry a lot of these books. I do recommend the publisher websites if you're willing to order, you know, one book or more than one book from one site, that uh-huh. they'll often offer free freight.
Wow.
So it's okay to order, you know, one book, and you don't get penalized for that. And of course, the publishers, often these are small publishers.
Right.
Scraping by supporting this kind of work, and you're helping them out because they make more if you buy it directly from them than from a bookstore. And it's also true with the books that are for charity. If you buy it directly from the publisher, the charity will get more money than if you buy it from a third party.
Well, thank you very much. And there's nothing more refreshing than an erotic mind that is also, you know, has a social consciousness. I love that. I mean, that's the consummate. Good for you. Thank you again so much, Jeremy, for your precious time. We are all the richer for the experience.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Dick. This is wonderful, and I appreciate the exposure and the time.
We'll be seeing each other in cyberspace then, yes?
Yes, indeed.
Be well.
You too.
Wow, what a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
The beauty of the mind, richness of the spirit, tenderness of the heart. I have all those things. Aren't taken away, but grow, increase with the years. Oh, what strange that I should be called a destitute woman when I have all these treasures locked in my heart.
Lordy, how you do go on, Blanche. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Ropex. You know how some guys get it in their head that the volume of cum and the velocity of their money shot are somehow associated with virility? Well, I don't buy that necessarily, but who among us doesn't like a nice puddle of dick wad to play with and admire? Ropex is here to help you boost the volume of your ejaculate and increase your orgasmic contractions. I'm happy to recommend Ropex to anyone who worries about puny spunk production. Again, I invite you to check out my review of Ropex on the product review page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for review number 21. And here's a tip. The makers of this fine product, New Generation Labs, offers a special. Order two, get one free. They also have a convenient auto-billing auto-shipping option available at an additional 10% discount. This is the ideal solution for those who want a regular supply of their product sent to them without the bother of going online to reorder. Pretty cool, huh? Check out the Ropex banner in the sidebar. You'll be glad you did. Be sure to look for Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Hey, and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? That's even better. Over and out.